Welcome to episode 23 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins, and I am joined, as always, by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
Doing well. You have to address me as Skip from now on, though.
I apologize. The new manager of the New York Yankees, or at least the offensive coordinator for the New York Yankees, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you? Skip, how are you?
Well, I'm not doing well because our offense isn't looking that great lately. So my job's on the line already.
You might be fired right after you got hired. So
yeah, it's going to be the quickest managerial stint in MLB history.
Yeah, we should probably explain what we mean for those that aren't on Twitter. You can let them know.
I think it was on Friday. I forget what day it was. I think it was Friday. I asked Boone essentially, like, why is Verdugo still hitting fourth? You know, he's been struggling for since May 1st. Like, his numbers are really bad since the start of May. And he was, you know, saying, you know, he's seeing a lot of good out of Verdugo. Like, even though, like, the numbers haven't been there, like, he's hitting the ball well, so on and so forth. And then I asked him, like, point blank, like, have you considered Austin Wells fourth because of how well he's performing in that same stretch? And he said he hadn't considered it yet. And then the following day, the lineup comes out and Verdugo is not hitting fourth anymore, and it's Austin Wells. And then I asked Boone, Boone, why is Wells hitting fourth? And he was like, well, I thought it was a good question by you. I thought about it all night. And if Kirsch wants him there, let's go. So I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good. It was nice to have some levity throughout all this BS. There's a sentiment going around in non-baseball circles of just asking for one day of precedent times. And I feel like that's kind of appropriate for being a Yankee fan, Yankee media member. I would like precedent times with the Yankees when they won games and look like a competent baseball team. I'm not talking about the things going on in our country right now, just solely, even though I would like it for that as well. We don't have to get into that, obviously. But for the Yankees, I would like precedent times back. And I don't mean like a 20-game winning streak. I don't mean a dynasty, even though that obviously would be great. I would just like to see a baseball team that can score runs outside of their two best players having to do everything. And seeing a bullpen arm come in and not give up bombs to teams that can't hit home runs consistently. And, you know, I would like precedent times, you know, just normal old baseball where you're watching a game and you're like, I think this team has a chance to win today, instead of what is becoming precedented times in a way and no longer unprecedented times where the Yankees just fall off a cliff and cannot figure out a way to get back to the top of the cliff. And we've spoken a lot about our belief, our shared belief, that the Yankees are still contenders. But the more that these games go by, the more they are not contenders to me. And I will be very clear here. I've said it a couple times. You said it as well. The trade deadline is kind of like the line of demarcation here, because none of these teams in the AL are very good, to be quite honest. You know, when you put them in the context of like elite teams, there isn't an elite team in the AL. We've talked about that. The trade deadline will make or break. But as we get to the trade deadline, this team has a bunch of issues. And more so for me, the issue is they don't know how to handle the issues. It's just like this is who they are. you know, like Nestor Cortez quotes before the game about pinstripes. Then after, the quotes are even worse. Aaron Boone is just refusing to acknowledge what is going on here, like publicly. And we get the same old song and dance. And then the play is the same. And on paper, yes, they are a contender, but they're not playing like one. I mean, they're a terrible team right now. And it's going on for too long. I don't know when it's going to end. I don't know if it will end at this point. And I think it's valid to ask that. Yeah, they're a mess. And they don't feel equipped to handle the mess, which is a big problem to me.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, did you enjoy the play?
I might not even go to a play again. I might just give up the play.
Yeah, I mean, things are not going well right now for the Yankees. Like, I was doing the math on it, and they're 14-23 in their last 37. That goes back to the Dodgers series. And that's 37 games. That's 37% of the season, basically, that they haven't been a good team. And it's just, I don't know if tiresome is a good word to use here, but just like hearing them just say like, oh yeah, it's just a little stretch, it's just a little bump in the road. It's like 37% of the season. It's been 14 of 23.
Yeah.
Like, is that a little stretch at this point? I mean, in my opinion, I don't think that's a little stretch.
No.
That's a big sample size.
Yeah.
So it's I was having this conversation. I don't want to throw them out there, but like I was having this conversation yesterday, and you know, when a game, we're recording this Monday morning before the Monday afternoon's game, just so you guys know. So if Carlos bombs and we don't talk about it, that is why. But I was having this conversation. It's like, what do you, as a reporter, it's like, I don't even know what to ask after a lot of these games, because it's like, it's the same shit that's been happening for 6 weeks now. Like, we've already asked about individuals who are not playing well. We've already asked about why the team's not playing well. We've asked about specific trends. So it's like, and I know fans are like, why aren't you guys harder on them? It's like, because our questions aren't going to change anything. Like, you're just going to get the same standard answers that you've been getting over this course of time. It's like, what is the purpose of like trying to pick a fight if you know what the responses are going to be? Right. Like, I tweeted during Sunday's game. It's like, prepare yourself that, you know, after the game, Boone's going to say that there were a lot of good at bats and they failed to cash in. It was basically word for word after the game.
Right.
And I tweeted it in the fourth inning. So it's like, what's the purpose of asking if you know what's going to be said? And you know the players are going to be like, yeah, we're confident, we believe in this group. It's what we were saying like a few episodes ago. It's like, they believe that because they wear pinstripes that everything's going to be okay, and they're just going to win, and they're just going to figure it out. And like I said before, it's like, well, they haven't done anything to deserve that level of arrogance. They haven't won. This team hasn't won. Only two players in that room have won championships, Rizzo and Juan Soto. Everybody else doesn't know what it's like to win a championship, but they just keep on saying like, we're just get through it. We're going to win. We're the Yankees. And I don't even know what that means at this point, because they're not, they haven't shown anything since 2009 that says that, oh yeah, like we're going to win a title. I'm sorry, but that's just the reality of the situation. Again, I said this a few weeks ago, but if the Astros want to say that, that's by all means go for it, because they've been winning. And look at the Astros now. Like they were terrible to start the season, and now they're in first place in the AL West. And now you can't, even though like they're, I don't think they have a good team, But if they get in the playoffs, like, you can't doubt them.
Right.
You can't pick against them because they know how to win. Like, this team, the Yankees, it's like, what have they shown to suggest that they're going to win or get out of this? I don't know. Anything?
No. And, I mean, we can even look at it through the prism of the games themselves. You know, we've talked a lot recently about manager comments and player comments, but you can see it in the play. I mean, I believe it was Saturday when Verdugo and Glaber had the bases loaded situation with no outs, right? Was that Saturday?
Yes.
When they swung it. Okay. So they have bases loaded, no outs. Your 4 and 5 hitters are up. And I believe there were some walks mixed in that got us to the bases loaded situation. Verdugo swings first pitch, a weak ground ball, and then Glaber swings at a pitch that's at his face. You know, it's like, it's not just the comments, it's the play itself. Like, you can see it in every game where they're just not doing the things necessary to win games. And it's been happening for a long time now. Like, you can point to every loss and pinpoint multiple moments in a game where they're just not doing the things necessary to win a baseball game or to win an inning. Like, just simplify it. Like, if you play baseball, you've heard people say win the inning, like all this like cliche stuff. They don't do that. Like, the at-bats themselves are poor. The pitch selection and swing selection, especially when runners are in scoring position, is incredibly poor. Like, I know there's like pressure and stress, and I'm trying to like hit a 10-run home run and all that stuff. But like, at some point, you just have to play baseball. Like, the situation is telling you what you can and cannot do. Like, there's pressure on the pitcher in a lot of these situations. They had another situation with Shane Baz yesterday.
That was bad.
He's terrible. Shane Baz was so bad. He's terrible. I know he's coming off for Tommy John, but right now he's a terrible pitcher. And they left 8 guys on base in like 3 or 4 innings.
He lasted 3 1/3 innings in Sunday's game. He had 5 walks. They had 4 hits against him. No runs.
It's unacceptable. Like, the comments and all those things we could put to the side. The play is garbage. It's garbage. They have 2 guys that are doing things consistently, and maybe 2.5 if you want to throw Ben Rice, or maybe 3 if you combine Ben Rice and Austin Wells. So you have 2 guys and then 2 other guys that turn into 1 guy. So you have 3 guys out of 9. And the rest of these guys are being terrible.
And that's why I thought Severino's comments, if you guys are listening and don't know what was said, but Severino, whether he was joking or not, like, there was some truth behind it. He was like, he's in a group text still with Yankees players, and Severino's really close with a lot of the guys still on this team. And the current Yankees were, you know, joking with Severino, saying, oh, like, you're scared of us, like, you don't want to face us, because the Mets, he was scheduled to pitch in the first Subway Series, but Carlos Mendoza bumped him out of that series because, you know, he was with the Yankees organization for many years. They know him very well. So Mendoza decided not to pitch him. He's not scheduled to pitch Tuesday or Wednesday. So the Yankees were like, oh, like, you're scared of us. And Severino was like, why would I be scared of you? Like, this is, you guys only have 2 good hitters. You just get around, you just walk them and face the other guys.
Right.
And again, like, that's one thing I do miss about having Severino around, is like, he is so honest and funny that, like, I do think that even if he was joking, there was certainly some truth behind what he said. And he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong. It's we've been saying this. It's like, if you get in a playoff series with this group, why the hell would you be pitching to Soto or Judge? I'd rather get beat by Glaber, Verdugo, DJ, whoever the hell you want to name. If I'm in a 7-game series, I am not letting Juan Soto or Aaron Judge beat me. And it's a problem right now for the Yankees that they have to figure out. And with the trade deadline coming up, it's like they need a lot of help, but it's unrealistic to think they're getting in, you know, 4, 5, however many hitters you think they need. Like, it's not happening. It's just like, it's not possible to replace basically your entire lineup. So, like, they need the guys currently on the roster to figure this out.
Right. There have been people on Twitter that have been telling me that the Yankees need 2 or 3 bats, and I keep saying they need 1 bat. And the reason I keep saying that is precisely why, because of what you just mentioned. They can't do wholesale changes to their lineup. Like, that's unrealistic. It's not possible. It's not happening. So, like, they need to bring in at least 1 productive bat that can lengthen the lineup and give protection for Judge. And they need Stanton. I mean, if there was ever a case for Giancarlo Stanton to make to the Yankee fan base about his importance to this team, it's this stretch of games. As soon as he got hurt, the offense fell off a cliff. And I don't think we've talked about that enough, to be quite honest, that when he got hurt, this slide started happening. And that's not a coincidence at this point. When he's on, covers so many other deficiencies in the lineup because he can get you 2 runs with 1 swing. And he mitigates the advantage that lefty pitchers have against this lineup. And he's so crucial to what they do, especially this year, that his absence has been glaring. And I know the pitching fell off for a while. Now it's getting a little better, but it's still inconsistent. The bullpen's bad as usual. But, like, for me, the offensive issues popped up as soon as Stanton went down, and they have not been able to recover. Even the revolving door at cleanup, even when Verdugo was the cleanup hitter and Stanton was batting 5, like, he was still mashing. He was on pace for, like, 35 to 40 home runs. Like, he was their best hitter, maybe outside of Judge and Soto, with runners in scoring position. They can't drive anybody in with runners in scoring position anymore. Like, that Giancarlo Stanton injury was really bad for them. And I'm not trying to defend him in the sense that, like, he can never stay healthy. I mean, that's on him. That's on his body, whatever. But, like, just in the context of production and performance for the team, his loss has been incredibly magnified by this bad run. And they can't get him back soon enough. And if he doesn't have this rehab assignment, I don't think he will, they need him to hit the ground running, because they, like, desperately need him. And then they have to get another bat. So the Stanton loss has been, like, significant, more significant than I thought it was going to be when it happened.
Well, since he went down, they ranked 23rd in slugging percentage. And the slugging issues do precede Stanton's injury. Like, they were struggling to slug even when Stanton was healthy. Like, the start of this recent stretch started on June 13th. They lost that 1 game against the Royals where they should have swept the Royals. And that led into the Boston series where Boston pulled the Yankees' pants down and just embarrassed them the entire weekend. And since then, it's just been really bad. But since Stanton's injury, they're 23rd in slugging right now. They are 18th in total home runs. And it's wild to think that a team with Soto and Judge is having problems slugging, because, like, they shouldn't. But no one outside of those two guys is doing anything. It's like, of course they're struggling to rank highly in slugging, because look at their lineup. Like, no one is really performing well. Like, even even, you know, you mentioned Ben Rice, but outside of his three homer game, like he hasn't really done much of anything. He's in a pretty, you know, long slump right now. I'm not worried about Rice, but you know, he himself is also slumping and in theory is one of those guys who should slug. I'm not like saying he's a bust or anything like that. I'm just saying, just pointing out the fact that he's slumping since that game. But yeah, I mean, Verdugo is in a hitless streak. I think it's like he's 0 for 21. LeMahieu, I think, is now 0 for 17. Gleyber can't do anything. Volpe has had a couple of encouraging games in the series. You know, we'll see if that can continue. You know, he had that big double, big three-run double that cleared the bases. You know, I think he's looked okay.
Yeah.
Wells hasn't really done anything lately, but he's had, you know, good at bats. But yeah, I mean, like just running down the order, it's like nobody's doing anything. So of course, like they can't rank highly in slugging percentage because, you know, you can't have two guys do everything because there are going to be some days where they're just off or they don't produce. And it's a problem because they are humans after all. And, you know, you can't expect Judge to go 4 for 4 with 2 home runs every day.
Right. All right. So we're going to get more into this slugging conversation because for me, at least, this lies at the heart of the Yankees issue, both on the pitching and hitting side. So we'll delve into that right after this break. And we're back. It's Randy. It's Chris. Chris is in some like crazy room in Yankee Stadium right now prior to the game. This afternoon's game looks like he's in a prison with a clock, a prison cell with a clock.
And it's an interrogation room.
Right. It looks like an interrogation room, some random room out of many random rooms throughout Yankee Stadium. So before we went to break, we started talking about the Yankees slugging issue, and we wanted to get into it a little bit more because it feels like if you can simplify the Yankees issues to one thing, it is probably slugging. And slugging for the lineup, meaning that they can no longer drive the ball collectively as a team. Obviously, we're putting Judge and Soto to the side when we mention that, but more concerning in some ways is the pitching staff's inability to control any team's slugging in these games. Now, over the last two games against the Rays, the Yankees have given up 8 home runs. The Tampa Bay Rays are not a power hitting team. And this is without Yandy Diaz, who hasn't been with the team dealing with a personal matter. So you have all kind of guys on the Rays hitting bombs. You have a Rosarena. Okay, it's Randy Rosarena. He hits home runs. But then you have Caballero, Siri, who does nothing offensively except like hit home runs randomly. Taylor Walls, Alex Jackson, like hitting an oppo home run. It's just bad, man. And this is a trend that has been revealing itself since June 13th. And while we were in break, you looked up the stats. So you should probably share that with the people to let us know how alarming this has been for the pitching staff.
Yeah, since June 13th, the Yankees have given up the most home runs in baseball, 51. Toronto was second with 48. They can't keep anybody in the ballpark, and they can't hit the ball out of the ballpark themselves. And when you have both of those combined, you're going to lose a lot of games. And that's what we've been seeing. Like, you know, for the most part, Stroman was solid Sunday, but you know, you give up home runs and you get burned. I mean, he wasn't the reason why they lost, because he left with 0 run support. But Carlos has been obviously getting bombed over the stretch. Nestor's been giving up homers. It's everybody. So I don't know how you fix that. I don't know if it's randomness or what. But if you look at the leaderboards for FIP in Major League Baseball, and you sort it by worst FIP, which I think is still, I think it's a better indicator of how well a pitcher is pitching.
Why do you say that, just for people that don't know what FIP is?
Because, all right, I'll use Carlos as an example here. If you look at Carlos's metrics when he had like a 2-point-something ERA, he was the beneficiary of very, very good defense behind him. So FIP kind of eliminates defensive outcomes. So if you have a really good defense behind you, even if you're not pitching well, like sometimes like you can escape without giving up many runs. We saw in the final start before the All-Star break, Carlos gave up just 2 runs. And it's like, if you really watch that outing, it's like he probably should have given up 6 runs.
Right.
So if you just flip the FIP to, sort it out by worst FIPs in baseball, Stroman has the 2nd worst FIP. Carlos has the 9th worst FIP. Nestor has the 23rd worst FIP. So a lot of these pitchers they have are getting lucky for the most part, because if you look at their ERAs, Marcus is still like 3.5-ish. So he's like well outperforming his expected stats, essentially. Carlos, he had that stretch in the beginning of the season where he was pitching to like a 2.5 ERA, but all of the advanced metrics were saying he is getting extremely lucky. And now those expected, statistics have caught up to him, and we're seeing this version of Carlos. And Nestor now has been falling into that trap as well, where, his just surface level stats were encouraging, but if you looked deeper into his metrics, it kind of pointed to probably some overperformance there, and those numbers are now creeping up on him. So I think for the Yankees, for why they were performing so well at the start of the season is because it was a lot of overperformance. And I thought my conversation with Blake in Toronto last month was really eye-opening for me, because this is a Yankees coach being bluntly honest, saying that like his pitching staff was overperforming. Mm-hmm. And I appreciated that, because a lot of the times you're just not going to get that level of transparency from the Yankees. And he was like, yeah, I think we had a lot of guys who were overperforming and regression was likely. And this was last month.
Let me ask you a question. Because there's a great sentiment out there amongst Yankees fans and people that follow the team that, just bring in anybody and Matt Blake will fix them. And I've said that a couple times. I mean, it's a popular sentiment. Mm-hmm. How true is that, though? Because Carlos Rodon has been terrible as a Yankee. Nestor Cortez is regressing. Stroman has not been good this year, I think, if we're being honest. I think a lot of things have kind of worked out in his favor, but I don't think he's been particularly good, and I don't think he has great stuff. Heel has obviously been very good. Schmidt was good. The bullpen's terrible. And I guess you could point to Tonkin and Weaver, but I can point to a lot of guys, way more than Tonkin and Weaver, who either are bad, underperforming, regressing, whatever. So just for this year, how accurate is this sentiment that, just give anybody to Matt Blake and he'll fix them? I'm not saying that like Matt Blake is the primary issue here, but I'm just curious like if that sentiment is actually accurate for this season's pitching staff.
I mean, for this season, no. But like on the whole, I would say Blake has done a really good job of coaching. A lot of pitchers have gotten better. I mean, Clay Holmes in particular, he was a nobody with Pittsburgh who had awful numbers. And whether you like it or not, like the statistics will tell you that he's been one of the best relievers since the Yankees acquired him. Gerrit Cole won a Cy Young. Luis Gil has developed into a really good pitcher who I think has the potential of, you know, turning into something really special, especially when he, you know, is a year, 2 years removed from, you know, recovering from Tommy John fully. So I think there are a lot of good pitchers who Blake has helped. But if you're talking about this year specifically, you know, it's obviously been a struggle, especially in the bullpen. They've cycled through a lot of different names. A lot of guys have underperformed. But again, like you just said, I don't think Blake is the problem here. I just think you're seeing guys just not performing how they should. And I think Carlos is probably the number one case here, where, you know, in that same conversation I was referencing with Blake a month ago, he was saying at that point, like, the plan that Carlos has going into games isn't working. It's basically on him to adjust. Like, you still have to have some level of buy-in from your players. And if that was still an issue a month ago and he just changed his sequencing in his last start against Baltimore, it's like, at some point, Carlos has to do this himself. Because the coaches are obviously saying this to him. And if he doesn't want to change, then what is Matt Blake supposed to do about that? It's like he can't throw the ball.
I also think, speaking about Carlos, that it's a pretty bad indicator for him that he's the fourth starter coming out of the break. And you were supposed to be the number two guy. And the only reason why you're not the fifth guy coming out of the break is because they're trying to protect Heal. Mm-hmm. So, essence, they think they think right now Carlos Rodon is their fifth best starter, and he's their second highest paid pitcher. And that is a terrible reflection of Carlos Rodon. And it's all on Carlos. Like, I think he's been put in plenty of positions to succeed. I don't think it's the organization. I mean, if you want to blame Cashman for signing him in the first place, okay, that's a different conversation, and it's a valid conversation to have. I'm not trying to downplay it or absolve Cashman of anything here. But he's, in their mind, and like, there are guys that I don't even think are pitching well. In their mind, he's their fifth best starter. And I don't really know what Carlos is going to do to change their perception other than pitching exceptionally well. And I, at this point, there's no evidence or hint or suggestion that he's capable of doing that anymore, at least in the American League East. I mean, so far has been a terrible signing, but I think this is an instance where it's on the player and not anyone else. I mean, it's just him. Like, he, as you mentioned, apparently there's a stubbornness to adjust. And then when he does adjust, he's not executing. And then when he's not executing, his body language, attitude, all those things are terrible. And it's getting worse. Like, I don't have any confidence that he's going to pitch well today. I don't know if the Yankees are going to win this game. And a lot of it starts with Rodon. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he gave up a 3 or 4 spot in the first inning, and then the Yankees are playing from behind again. Not to say that I want that or that it will happen. It's not a prediction. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, random Rays hitter hits a 3-run home run in the first inning. You know what I mean? It's like he's been awful, you know, and he's healthy. So now we can't talk about his health anymore. He just He's been stinking it up. He's been terrible. You know, he's been bad.
What's bizarre about Carlos specifically is, like, if you just look at the pitch profiles, like Stuff Plus and like how those are grading out, like they're still as high as ever in his career. So like the stuff is there. It's just he has problems locating the pitches well, and that's really burned him a lot in a lot of these games. Like, how many fastballs have we seen just leak over the heart of the plate and whoever's at bat just hits it 420 feet? Like, that's happened a lot.
Or how many fastballs have we seen that, like, run arm side that are up and away that are not competitive pitches that put him in a position where he has to come in with the fastball? Mm-hmm. You know, there are a ton of pitches where, like, you don't know if the ball slipped out of his hand. You don't know if his, like, body is going too fast for his arm. Like, all these, like, mechanical things where he has, like, non-competitive pitches. And then all of a sudden he has to come in and then he gets hammered. You know what I mean? It's just, to me, it was the same issue last year. It's just he has terrible command. And I'm not really sure. I don't know his mechanics well enough and certainly don't understand, like, universal pitching mechanics to say, oh, it's X, Y, and Z. But there's clearly something going on mechanically that doesn't allow him to have consistent command. And then he gets crushed. And it's like they haven't been able to fix it. And I feel like the pitch sequencing thing was a little overblown because he can't throw a strike. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter what pitch you're throwing when you're throwing it, if it's not a strike or it's not even a pitch that looks like a strike and then it becomes a ball. You know, there's nothing deceptive about it. You just know out of his hand. You get to watch the game on TV and you know it's a ball as soon as it comes out of his hand. So I know the hitter can see it. They're far more skilled than we are at picking these pitches up. You know, like, throw a strike. Like the Baltimore game that you were referencing, he only pitched like four innings or something because he had like 800 pitches because he couldn't throw a strike. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been bad, man. I know I keep saying that, but like he's been terrible. And I was all for the signing. I was like excited about it. And he's been poor, man. He's been bad.
I thought it was a risk when they signed him, just given his injury history. Just speaking with people who knew him personally and just observing like his body language that you were talking about, I didn't know, just from having those conversations, I didn't know if New York was the best place for him. It's a tough market to pitch, especially if you underperform. And if you're highly paid like he is, I'm just very curious to see how these next 4 years go.
Right.
It's 4 years. And obviously, like, you know, fans want to talk about just trade him. Well, no, because you can't, because he has no value and no other team is going to want to take on that kind of contract for someone who hasn't performed well. So this isn't MLB The Show where you can just trade everybody. And everybody's talking about, well, yeah, they should trade DJ LeMahieu too. And also no, because he has $30 million left over the next 2 years. He has a full no trade clause in his contract because he has 10 and 5 rights. He's been a player for at least 10 years in the big leagues and with his current team for 5 years. So can't trade him. It's like, I don't know what fans are thinking about sometimes when they just like suggest just trade all these guys or DFA them. Like, it just doesn't work like that. It's not a video game. For the Yankees, like, they just have to hope at some point in these next 4 years he figures it out, because I'm not very encouraged that it's going to happen this year, frankly.
Yeah, I'm with you. And apparently the Yankees aren't thinking that either, because he's there. They think he's their fifth best starter at the moment. And that's with other guys struggling. You mentioned LeMahieu. And, I mean, this is a problem. I mean, we can talk about two guys before we get to the break. I know we talked about Verdugo a little bit. But Verdugo, we can really talk about three guys. Gleyber, Verdugo, and LeMahieu are major issues. I'm basically expressing the obvious here, but sometimes the obvious just needs to be expressed. They have obviously been brutal, but as we said before, you can't reconstruct your entire lineup in the middle of the season. Like, that's not realistic. So the question I have for you, out of those three guys, which guy do you think needs to be replaced the most? Because there are three starters. They're basically entrenched as the starters, and they're all bad. And there's some guys contribute defensively more than others. All those things matter here. So in your opinion, you watch the team, you're around the team. If you could only pick one bat to replace one of those three guys in the trade market, which guy would you replace?
It's a very easy answer for me. It's DJ. He's 36 years old. He hasn't been good for basically two calendar years now. I went back to the All-Star break in 2022, which is when really he started his decline. And I think I checked yesterday, but at the time I checked, he had an 89 WRC plus for two full calendar years at this point. And there's nothing to suggest that he is going to turn around his season, despite, you know, whatever the Yankees say, whatever he says. Like, there's no evidence that this is going to change. I'm so sick of hearing that, you know, he has good swings and good at bats. It's the same shit they were saying about Josh Donaldson, and then they DFA'd him. It's like, I'm so sick of hearing that. It's driving me crazy, because it's like, I watch the games. I played baseball growing up. Like, I know what a good player looks like. He can't hit.
Right.
I don't know what to say about it. It's like, there's nothing encouraging about his profile right now. So if you're asking me out of the three, which one, like, would I replace? It would be DJ, and I would probably do it immediately and just put Oswaldo there. I'm not saying like he's the answer or he could be better, but you got to see what he can do, because what are you getting from DJ? I get it's a sunk cost. So there's probably some like, well, we already paid him, so might as well just throw him out there. It's like you're still trying to win games, and he's not giving you the best opportunity to win.
Right. And
he's an automatic out.
He's an automatic out. And to me, like, with sunk costs, it's like, okay, well, you're already paying him, just put him on the bench. Like, you know, you already have to pay him, so just sit him. Like, I don't see a reason for that to be.
The Yankees cater to veterans.
Right.
That's just what they do.
Right. It's a philosophy.
Look at the leash that Donaldson got
right
last year. Look at the leash that Harrison Bader got, who right hasn't done anything, but he's been in the league for like 7 years.
Right.
That's just what they do.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's definitely an organization philosophy when it comes to vets. And like, LeMahieu's protected by that. Since you took DJ, I'm like struggling to choose between Gleyber and Verdugo, because they've both been horrific. And
I did want to add one point before you answer, but I was thinking of this. Imagine if Anthony Rizzo was still playing too.
Oh god. Like,
because he wouldn't have gotten Ben Rice.
Right.
Like, they would have certainly wrote it out with Rizzo, who was awful too.
Right.
But because he's respected in the clubhouse, he's a longtime veteran, paid a lot of money, they probably would have been doing the same thing with him and saying he has great swings, it's close. They were saying that right before he got hurt.
Right.
I mean, it's just like, I get paid to watch this, so I know how crazy it would probably be if I wasn't getting paid and like having to listen to that. Because
it's nonsense.
What are we watching?
It's insulting. I mean, we've talked about it multiple times. Like, I'm not getting paid to watch them, and you watch these post-game pressers, and you're kind of, like, numb to it, but you're also still aware that they're gaslighting you. I mean, they just don't care, and it's obvious. And it's like they're just going to navigate this. And it's funny because if you were just honest, like, every once in a while, people wouldn't be so up in arms about it. You know, if you just said, look, man, we're playing like crap. These guys are playing like crap. They're having terrible at-bats. They're not having good swings. And you said that every once in a blue moon, people would be like, all right, man, well, at least you see what we see and we get it. Okay, like, play better. You know what I mean? But when you, like, have us watch these – well, not have us watch these games. We choose to watch the games. But we watch these games and then you choose to – say these things that are clearly gaslighting everybody and are disingenuous, you know, it just makes the chorus louder. You know what I mean? Like, we all know what you're doing. Like, you know that we know you're BSing us, which also just makes it ridiculous. Like, we all know that the game that's being played here and the people playing the game are aware that the people listening know that it's a game. So it's like, it's not productive on either side. For me, Max Goodman, Max T. Goodman, tweeted this out. And since 2020, Alex Verdugo's the worst regular left fielder that the Yankees have had. Now, this includes Benintendi, Hicks, Gallo, all the left fielders. Alex Verdugo has been the worst one so far, and he's had more at-bats or plate appearances than all the people that I've mentioned. And it's I feel like it's a toss-up between Gleyber and Verdugo to replace. I would say Verdugo because it's easier to get an outfielder, I feel like, than a second baseman. So just with, like, position availability – I would pick Verdugo. Also, I don't like that Verdugo is consistently not hustling. Like, the at least there is, like, some at-bats where Gleyber, like, puts a good swing on the ball and, like, has a line drive. He has a couple hits. Like, there is some level of production. Verdugo is trash, and he's been playing like trash. His attitude is trash, like, in terms of, like, effort. The play in Baltimore was unacceptable nonsense. He has not bounced back from that. He got screwed in one of the at-bats yesterday with that call. That call was horrific. That was garbage.
That was bad.
That was very bad. And then to make it worse, you throw out the manager because you're bad, which always bothers me. But I watched Duran from the Red Sox yesterday when they were playing the Dodgers ground out to second base. And this man was running to first base like his hair was on fire. Now, he's an all-star. He had a home run earlier in that game. But that guy's, like, competing. And I'm not a big, like hustle on every single play. Like, that's true baseball. Play the game the right way. Like, I'm not into that at all. But when it is that consistent and that obvious after such poor contact at bat after at bat, the very least you can do is pretend that you care. Just pretend. Because it's like the two things combined. You had a terrible at bat, you had a terrible result, and then you're not putting in the effort to at least make up for the two bad things that you just had in that at bat. And I've had enough of Verdugo. To be quite honest, and admit, I didn't like the trade when it happened. I was not a fan. I tweeted, he's an average player at best. And people were like getting on me. And I was like, he's an average player at best. I admittedly got caught up and we talked about like how he had an impact on his team early on in the season. So I was like, okay, maybe I was wrong. And maybe like people saying that he was better than that were right. And I was like, okay, very possible that I was wrong. I was not wrong. He stinks. And on top of that, he doesn't put in the effort. And he's a front runner in the sense that, like, when things were going well, my man was barking in the dugout and he was a dog and he had 87 chains on, which is cool. Like, I do like his jewelry. I do like his bling. I appreciate it. It's nice. I like his cleats. But he's been stinking it up. And, like, he had a lot to say when he was doing well, and now he can't run the first base when he's struggling. And it's like, well, which one are you? You know what I mean? And, like, I say that partly because he's not in Boston because of stuff like this. Like, there's a history here. It's not just with the Yankees. So, like, his reputation is preceding him now. And we've talked a lot about attitude and perception and quotes and all those things. And to me right now, Alex Verdugo is embodying all the poor aspects of this team when it comes to, like, the effort and the quotes and the effort to win games. He's not a good example of trying to win games right now. And it's going on for a very long time, not just production, but, like, effort. And to me, it's unacceptable. If you want to talk about being the Yankees, then, and you, like, got on Glaber for certain plays and got on Gary Sanchez for certain plays, like, there's a history of people, of players being, like, attacked not just by fans, but by Michael Kay and Yes and all these other places. Verdugo is getting a pass, and I don't know why. He stinks. He just got here, and he does it all the time, and he's not even hitting the ball hard. Like, Gary Sanchez will hit the crap out of the ball, at least. He's not even hitting the ball hard, and we all know he's hitting a ground ball to second base. So it's like, if I had to replace somebody because of, like, position availability and also just attitude and effort, like, Verdugo would be my guy.
Man, that was some passion there.
I mean, I wasn't – it just came out because I think I've had enough of
– I hear that.
I mean, it's like, do one thing well. You're struggling. I get it. You're struggling. I don't want you to struggle. Like, genuinely, I want you to perform well because it helps the team. But, like, you're stinking it up and you don't play hard. And you're face planting. Like, do something. One thing. You can do one thing. You can control effort.
He's 14 for his last 100.
What is that? What kind of a number is that? Like, that's crazy.
On base percentage at 196, slugging 210, OPS 406. It hasn't been good for sure.
How's that? How is that better than LeMahieu? It's the same numbers.
I don't have it in front of me, but it's
they're close.
Probably very similar. Probably very similar.
Yeah, they're close.
The one thing I wanted to mention with Verdugo specifically, he spoke after Sunday's game and was saying, you know, he's at his best when he's going opposite field. Again, I'm not an MLB. They may feel this way, but, like, the numbers would suggest that's not a good strategy to have lots of success. left-handed hitters, and I'm sure it's the same for – basically the same for right-handed, but left-handed hitters, because he's a lefty, when they go opposite field, they have a 109 WRC plus this season. When they pull the ball, they have a 174 WRC plus. What's also interesting is basically during the stretch where the Yankees have been bad since like June 13th or June 15th, I forget who tweeted this, so I'm sorry, but I saw it yesterday, and he was well above league average in WRC plus before like June 14th or something like that. And he was pulling the ball more. And then since that date, he's been going opposite field more and not pulling the ball. And he's been horrible. And I thought it was also interesting. Meredith Marakovic from Yes interviewed James Rousen for the pregame show yesterday, and James was like, Verdugo's being too pull happy. I don't get the thinking here. I really don't. I'm very confused. They've had three day games in the past few days, so I haven't been able to ask James myself because they don't have batting practice during before day games. Like, I want to ask, it's like, why is going opposite field a good strategy, especially for Yankee Stadium, where left field is very hard to have success? Like, we saw Soto like smash like four balls to left center field, and they were doubles. If those balls are pulled, they're, you know, 30 rows back for like how well he struck those balls. It's just a hard place to hit in left field is. That's why Soto's playing right field, because left field is so cavernous here.
Right.
So it's not the easiest place to have lots of success. Left field in Fenway, where Verdugo last played, sure. Like, you want to pelt the wall, that's fine. That's your strategy, cool. But like going opposite field as a lefty here, it doesn't make much sense. So I don't get it. And he was like, if I go opposite field more, I'm better. Well, guess what? Like, he has his highest opposite field percentage this year. And, you know, his numbers are? His worst in his career. He's going opposite field more, and he's having the worst year of his career. So I don't understand the strategy. I don't know if he's aware of those numbers. I don't know if he's being told those numbers. But just looking at it statistically, I'm not a coach. I'm not a player. But just looking at the raw numbers, it's not a good strategy to have.
Some of these things just don't make sense. I mean, we could talk about this another time, but I think we've talked about it before, the decision to go more contact oriented in a lot of these like lineup spots versus power makes no sense. Like, I don't know what the justification for that is, other than, you know, maybe you got caught up in the too many damn home runs era for Yankees fans. I don't know. I don't think that the organization is making decisions based on Yankee fan sentiment, but like the need for more contact hitting makes no sense to me. And certainly this idea of lefties going opposite field in Yankee Stadium makes no sense. I mean, Soto goes that way because he goes that way. He's Juan Soto. He could do whatever he wants. But like Alex Verdugo thinking I got to go opposite field when the short porch is right there, and you like, and you were a doubles machine before you got here. You know, maybe you were a doubles machine because, you know, the Green Monster's there and you're just peppering the wall and you're not actually like that kind of slugger. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's a misevaluation from somebody about his profile, because it makes no sense. You're a lefty hitter in Yankee Stadium. I mean, it's the house that Ruth built. There's a reason why that's the nickname for the stadium, and you know why they brought those dimensions over. Like, I don't know, man. There's just a bunch of stuff that when I listen to it or look at it, I start to question myself if I'm like stupid or something. And maybe I am. I don't think I am. But like some of these things, you're just like, this doesn't make sense. I fundamentally do not understand the thinking here. And then you hear the coach say he's too pull happy when he's clearly not too pull happy. He's talking about the ground balls to second base.
Yeah, I get that. But like, overall, he's not pull happy.
Right. He's not pull happy. And he's rolling over. And like, again, I'm not an MLB hitting coach, but I know that like, if you are rolling the ball over to the pull side, that there is either a timing or mechanical issue. And a lot of times it's timing because you're late. So now you're like rushing through the zone to get catch the barrel up with the pitch in the zone. So like, I'm like not some hitting expert, but like a weak ground ball to second base is not being pull happy. I know that. So why is the hitting coach telling Meredith Marakovic he's too pull happy? You know, you just sit there and you just say, it's frustrating because some of this stuff speaks for itself, and then they're telling you 1 + 1 = 3, and it's annoying.
It's bizarre though, because if you look at the minor league system, like all those guys do down there is just hit home runs and pull the ball, and they have a lot of success. And then they get to the major league level, and it's like a different system. Again, we've talked about Volpe. Volpe was a pull hitter who hit fly balls, and he hit home runs. That's what he did in the minors. That's how he became the top prospect for the Yankees, and why there was a lot of significant hype behind him. And then again, this year, like, they want him to go opposite field and use all fields. It's like, for what purpose is this serving?
Right.
It's bizarre that there seems to be a disconnect between what, like, the minor league system is doing very, very, very well. And then they get to the majors and it's like, let's, you know, scratch together some singles and hopefully we can get a run, or let's get an RBI ground out here and, like, let's keep the baton moving. And, like, that's something that, like, Judge himself says a lot. Like, we got to just, like, keep the line moving. It's like, how about putting the ball in the seats?
Right. Just hit a home run. I mean, not you, Aaron Judge. You do that very well. I'm not talking about you.
Yeah, so I'm not. Yeah.
Like, but the team.
That should be the strategy. Just hit the ball over the fence.
Be like Aaron Judge. Hit the ball.
And not everybody can do that. But, like,
but they have a lot of guys that can, though.
Yeah. So, like, again, Volpe has shown it in the past. Oswaldo in the minors, like, he was pulling the hell out of the ball and putting it in the seats. Like, it's just not happening now. Glaber's power is gone.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, they have guys that can. Weird. They have guys that have power. You know what I mean? Like, Volpe has power. Glaber has power. Wells has power. Verdugo has some power. LeMahieu doesn't. I mean, most of your guys have power. Like, they've hit 20 home runs before. So what's the problem? All right. Chris is at the game, so we got to rush through this, make sure he can do his job. So we will go to this break, come back, and hit up the mailbag. It's mailbag time. We have three questions. We're just going to jump right into it. From Nate, Randy, Chris, happy Monday. Happy Monday, Nate. I was looking at team stats from across the league, and I find it very concerning that outside of Judge and Soto, the next highest OPS on the active team is Volpe at 676, Stanton at 794, and we'll be back soon. The current constructed lineup is full of guys with a below average OPS. When you look at the Phillies, Orioles, and Dodgers, over half of their lineup is above league average. Where is the help coming from? Do we have to count on guys like Volpe, Verdugo, and Glaber to start producing to have a chance? I'm not trying to be a pessimistic Yankees fan, as I had high hopes on this team. I generally don't think this team has enough offensive depth to make a run. The August schedule leans their way facing a lot of bad teams, but I don't think you can call yourself a legitimate World Series contender when your lineup is full of holes. Lastly, what are the chances DJ LM is a Yankee on March 1st, 2025? It's honestly sad to watch one of the best all-around hitters turn into a negative war player. At what point do the political pundits get him to step aside like President Biden? I wasn't expecting that. Okay. Let's split a series today and call it a positive. Have a great week.
That's funny. I think to answer the question, it goes back to what we were saying at the start. Like, you can't just replace five guys in the lineup. Like, at some point, the players you have to perform better. So I'm sure that the Yankees front office will try acquiring a bat. The one thing I will caution with that is sometimes it's very difficult to just simply execute a trade. And with this trade deadline specifically, we've said it before, but there just aren't many sellers, and there's a lot of teams looking to buy. The prices are going to be jacked up. Not to say that that's an excuse for the Yankees, because they do have stuff that they could trade. But, you know, I wouldn't be stunned if, like, we're talking next week after the trade deadline and the Yankees only made, like, one or two moves, like, not really, like, needle movers, just because of, like, the reality of the situation with the trade deadline. As far as DJ, again, he's owed $30 million over the next 2 years. It's around the number that Hal has been comfortable paying guys to go away. Donaldson, Hicks, Ellsbury, A-Rod. Not Hicks, because he was... Hicks did have like $20-ish million left. Donaldson didn't have that much because he was a free agent. But like $25 to $27 million has been like the number where Hal's been like, you know what, I'll just eat this and just go away. So if I were betting, I would still think that when I'm down in Tampa next year for spring training, DJ will be there.
So you're saying the Pod Save American bros won't be on the Yankees payroll for a couple months to help them get rid of DJ LeMahieu? <what you're>
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of relentless media attacks on just trying to push Biden out. I don't think anyone on the Yankees beat will be trying to push DJ out. Because the stakes are just not that high.
They're not that high. You know, we'll leave that one alone. But thanks, Nate, for injecting some real life into this and making us laugh. Appreciate it. Also, I agree with you that regardless of if they get bats, singular, plural, some of these guys are going to have to like step up. You always have to rely on the guys that you built the roster around. And at some point, it's on the players. You know, it's not always management. Sometimes the players just need to play better. And they need one of Volpe, Verdugo, or Glaber to step up when Stanton gets back. And if they add a bat, they still need one of those guys to lengthen the lineup. And if that happens, then they're in business. Like, you don't need to have, like, nine all-stars in your lineup. But if you can get one of Volpe, Glaber, or Verdugo going with a healthy Stanton and a bat, then they're fine. Lots of ifs, though. I mean,
all of them have to come together.
Right now, they're in trouble, offensively. Luke W. Uh-oh. It's Luke. Rays fan popping up. So from a Yankees fan perspective, where does the majority of the blame lie at this point of the season? And if Cashman gets to keep his job, is that Hal or a larger part of a problem in baseball? MLB owners are very reluctant to hire a new head of baseball ops. After Cashman, the 10 longest tenured head of baseball operations, have three titles between them. So, like, where does this – I mean, it's kind of early to answer this question for this specific season, but, like, I guess in totality, where – and a lot of people actually, like, say to us that I've noticed, like, why don't we talk about Cashman more? And it's, like, it's kind of hard to talk about Cashman when the season's going on, because the manager has more influence than the general manager on a day-to-day basis, and the players are playing. Not to absolve Cashman. He put the roster together, and this roster still has issues, so that is on Cashman. Cashman deserves criticism for this. But in your opinion, since you're around the team a lot, like, where do you think a lot of the quote-unquote blame lies with the way that the Yankees are, like, inconsistent in their performance?
I mean, it's really hard to say, honestly. Like, if we're not blaming the players, I guess, like, I still think the players need to perform. A lot of these guys are paid lots of money to perform, and they're not performing. So if it was me, like, I'm blaming the players for the most part. There's only so much that Boone can do to get the guys going. Again, he's not in the batter's box. He's not on the mound. You know, he can put guys in positions to succeed for sure. But ultimately, the guys on the field have to do their job. So if it was me, I would be putting most of the blame on the players. I do think that, and this is something I wrote maybe back in November, but at some point, given the limitations that the roster has just from a payroll perspective, at some point, Hal has to be comfortable just spending what it takes to build a team that is well-rounded. He's said many times that $300 million is too much money. It shouldn't be costing that much money to, you know, win a title. And, like, I totally agree with him. But the Yankees are different because of just with the payroll figures that they have on their roster. Like, if you don't want to spend $300 million, it's going to be hard to build a team that is well-rounded just because you're paying Judge $40 million. You're paying Garrett $36 million. Giancarlo's $32. Right there, we're almost at $100 million. It's like you have to be comfortable. We're over $100 million. $1,000. I was a journalism major, so sorry for my math. But like, Hal has to be comfortable spending what it takes to build a complete roster. And if you're putting a salary cap on yourself, you're not doing yourself any favors to win. So I do think that Hal deserves some blame here for just putting a cap on what he is willing to spend for a team. Because, you know, I was looking at this in the offseason before they signed, I mean, before they traded for Soto. You know, at that point, there was rumblings that it was possible. But, you know, if you're not willing to spend whatever it takes, then you're not giving yourself the best opportunity to build the best team. And he's already said
right
to us that the payroll is unsustainable going into next year. So you know what that means? A lot of these guys are probably going to have to be moved or not re-signed because Soto is the priority. You know, he will find money to try and re-sign Juan Soto, but that means that there's going to have to be some cuts elsewhere, and you may see more young players up next season. It's like, no, just try and sign the best damn guys possible. Right. You have money. You make like this. The Yankees make the most revenue in baseball. Like, they're not short on cash. Like, I get he has other responsibilities to pay for, the stadium, YES Network, other investors in the team, but there's a lot of money here that should be allocated to the roster. And yeah, he hasn't done that for the most part at levels where the Yankees should be.
You make more money if you win. I mean, seems like, I mean, they make a ton of money and they're not winning. You make more money if you win. And my answer to the question is I blame everybody. The players are first because they're ultimately the ones like going out and performing. It's a player's game. So to me, it's on them. I think, as I've said multiple times, I think Boone is an excellent manager of men and of people, and I will always give him credit for that. I think that there are other deficiencies to his managerial game that limit the Yankees. I don't think he's a great bullpen manager. This year, he's kind of getting a pass because the bullpen is actually not good. That's not his fault. But again, navigating adversity, he's not good at it. We have like a 4-year sample now, and this keeps happening, and he can't lead them out of it. And that's a failure on his part. The roster has holes. That is Cashman's fault. Like, even with the restrictions that Hal puts on him, and those restrictions are very real, he doesn't, I think that he could be more creative in building the roster. Like, Hal didn't tell him to trade for Josh Donaldson and IKF. Like, that's on Cashman. Hal did not tell him or mandate to him, I don't believe, to get Carlos Rodon. Like, these are decisions that have hurt the team. Now, yep. Do I think Hal told Brian Cashman that someone like Bryce Harper is not in play? Yes. And do I think that that has been a damaging decision to this franchise? Absolutely. So that leads me to Hal. And everything that you said about Hal, I agree with. And ultimately, if we're not talking about the players, the buck stops with the owner. He's the one that sets the vision. He's the one that sets the budget. He's the one that places the orders. Like, you're going to follow what the guy says who owns the team. And he's the voice. He's ultimately the voice of the Yankees. So a lot of it comes back to the owner. The GM can only do so much if he's told you're allowed to do things within these parameters. So to me, the top of the list would be the players and Hal, and then you would have Cashman and then Boone. But I think everybody deserves blame. You win championships as an organization and you don't win championships as an organization. That's how I look at it. And as a director who has to establish the vision for his team, like when you make a project, like that's my responsibility. I have to establish it and put people in a position to succeed so that we can all feel like we're a part of it and contributing to executing this vision for people to enjoy the things that we're making. It's the same thing in sports. And like that begins and ends with Hal. And if Hal doesn't allow you the space to navigate, considering all the factors that go into it, you're going to hamstring yourselves. And then you have situations like what you have now and like what you've had over the last couple of years. You know, DJ LeMay, you should not be your third baseman, but you don't know if you can get a third baseman now because the owner doesn't want you to spend a bunch of money. You know, it all works in tandem. So to me, everybody gets some blame until they win a championship. And then, you know, things are good for 5 days and then the cracks again. All right. Last question. Tim Jennings. Hello. Hello, Tim. With the trade deadline coming up, I know a lot of focus is on trying to get a better starting third baseman, better relief pitching, and maybe another serviceable starting pitcher. I'm adding this part, get Jack Flaherty. That's what I add. But what are your guys' thoughts on if the Yankees should also be looking at acquiring some guys to be bench pieces? Do you think the Yankees go into the entire season with Jones and Davis as their bench players, or do they look for upgrades? And to go off on a little tangent here, why is J.D. Davis even on this team? They don't trust him to play third base, which is why DJ continues to start. The plan to platoon him with Rice was almost immediately abandoned, and Judge has been getting most of the DH reps with standout. I legitimately have no idea why he's on the roster over a guy like Peraza or Vivas at this point. Thanks, and keep up the good work with the podcast. Thank you.
It's funny because I was having this conversation this morning about J.D. Davis. It's like, I don't know what the purpose is. It's not a big deal, ultimately. Whatever. If it, like,
maybe he gets dropped and Stanton comes back.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to get rid of him or, you know, Jones if they wanted, but it's ultimately not a big deal because when Davis was acquired, like, Rice was brand new. He had, like, 10 at-bats in the majors when they got Davis, and obviously Rice has done well enough where it just makes sense to play him, so that's why he hasn't gotten much playing time. As far as upgrading the bench, absolutely, if you can upgrade the bench, you should, but you know, the priority here is getting better starters, and then you move the starters to the bench to replace those guys. That's what the plan should be.
Right. Yeah. The Yankees don't have the luxury of looking at bench pieces right now.
Their
starters are bench players.
Yeah. So if you upgrade them, you move them to the bench, and you can have, you know, in August, in September, you can have TJ on the bench. You can have Rizzo on the bench if you wanted. Like, that's totally like fine. And then you have some depth if your actual starters go down and, you know, at that point, if you're in a bind, you know, DJ can play or Rizzo can play or whoever it is that's on the bench at that point. But the priority should be upgrading the starters.
Yeah.
Like that's how you're going to win games, by getting better starters. And again, it's unlikely that you're going to get 4 or 5 new starters, but, you know, one minimum, I think, has to happen.
One minimum, yeah.
Yeah. Again, it's not a given that it happens just because of how hard it is to trade, especially in the expanded playoff era where there's lots of teams who think they're still in the race when they probably shouldn't be. But one minimum should be the goal come July 30th.
Yeah, they're not good enough to just focus on the bench. I mean, let's be honest here. So, if they just walk away, if they walk away from this trade deadline with just bench pieces, then they have failed at the trade deadline. You know, that's not going to move the needle here. Yep. That's not the big issue here. Thank you, Tim, for your question. Thank you, everyone, for your questions. We're going to wrap it up because Chris needs to eat breakfast before the game.
And, at this point, lunch.
Well, he needs to eat lunch. He needs to eat food before the game starts. and I have to go and take care of some things. So things meaning my Central Park softball playoff game. So I got to do that.
Nice.
Thank you, everybody, for checking us out. Chris, do you have any final words before we get out of here?
No, I mean, next time we speak, we may be talking about new Yankees. So very interested to see what happens this coming week.
Yeah, we should probably do something before the trade deadline just to get people ready and see if we can talk about some of the rumors, if there are any rumors by that time. So we'll figure it out. We'll let people know. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. You can also find us on our YouTube channel of the same name. Thank you, everyone, for the support. We appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for checking us out. So we will figure out when we'll discuss or have kind of like a trade deadline special, or, you know, the like cliche title for those types of things. But until then, we will speak with you all soon.